we're hesitant to talk about it, but the truth is that power dynamics are in play whenever and wherever human beings are related to each other. And they may be easy to see, they may be more difficult to see, but they're always there. Hi, Aspen. This is Tricia and Jim, and we're here with the second podcast about systems thinking. And want to just dive back into a conversation about systems and how they work. And remember us talking about that one of the things that's very important is not just understanding the parts of a system, but being able to understand how the parts are connected. And that brings us to our topic for today, which is that we want to talk about power dynamics, looking at how parts of a system relate to each other, are connected to each other, means that we have to look at who has what kind of power over or with who. I don't know if that was good English, but that's what we have to look at. Because for one thing, when we look at what we're trying to accomplish when we go to work, and we look at the reasons that people are unhappy at work, or feel really alive and invigorated at work, it often has to do with power.
With how power is used, with what the effects of it are, what makes it such a, what makes it, it can be on either end of a spectrum. It can be really disempowering or it can be really empowering. And a lot of that has to do with our recognition of the presence of power and then our effectiveness in being able to use power in ways that help us to all function according to the design.
Yeah, and so a starting place would be that power is inherently neutral. Right. Sometimes, I think sometimes we're hesitant to talk about power because we're not supposed to want power, right? Especially as Christians. But, right. You know, we're hesitant to talk about it. But the truth is that power dynamics are in play whenever and wherever human beings are related to each other. And they may be easy to see. They may be more difficult to see. But they're always there. And one place to start with that, I think, is that they're there whether we intend them to be there or not. And mm-hmm. I think that's really important because when we start talking about power, we're talking about how systems are designed, not necessarily how any one person woke up in the morning and decided that things would be, how things would be.
Yeah, I mean, I would say especially at Aspen, nobody woke up in the morning and said, I want to design the system in a way that I can get more power and you can get less. Or that woke up in the morning and said, I want to get power because I want to use it in ways that are to my advantage and not to your advantage. Those things are not in the mix. What's in the mix is that power is just a very real influence in the system. And the question is, do we see it or not see it? Do we understand its impact or not? And can we develop habits and skills and behaviors that utilize power in ways that give life to everybody who's a part of the company?
So I think let's start with four kinds of power. These have been expressed by a lot of different people, but if you've read Brené Brown's book, Dare to Lead, you've seen it there. And just thinking about power showing up in four different ways. And so the first one is power over. And that's what we typically think about when we think about power. It's kind of the power to say, because I said so.
Hmm. And yeah, it's usually based on control and fear and blame. I'm going to make you do something. It can be like a benevolent dictator. I can be a really nice guy, but I have a way I want things done, and I have a way that I think is best. And I'm going to use my power to ensure that it gets done the way that I want it done.
So we'll sometimes tolerate people having power over us if we think it's a legitimate authority, or right. if we buy into their vision, or if we do feel like they're benevolent. But that's only one kind of power, is the power yeah. over.
Yeah, another kind of power is what we would call the power with. And in that kind of power, the primary word that comes to mind is the word collaboration. We may not all make the ultimate decision in what we're going to do or not do, but we get to contribute to it, and our voices are actually heard and understood. That's power with.
Yeah, I think it kind of, we have a sense that of we when we're operating, and it's power with, that together we have some power of some kind. The third kind of power is power to. And this is the power to make a difference, the power to reach our goals, the power to do meaningful work. It's the power to accomplish things. And it's a very, very powerful force in human beings. You know, we will tolerate lots of other kinds of even misuse of power as long as we have the power to make the difference or reach the goals that are important to us. And the thing about power too is that at least in its pure form, it doesn't require that anyone else loses power. Mm-hmm. You know, with power over, I have more power than you have. In power with, the people who are inside have the power, the people who are part of the we. But if you're not on the inside, you know, you have a sense that you don't have power. With power too, nobody else has to lose power. It's strictly about what I can create with my own effort, what I have the power to do.
And then the fourth kind of power is the power within. And that's just that inner sense that we can take action, that we have agency, that we can reach out to others, that we can make things happen. And that is the opposite of what we often find in organizations who don't deal with power, the presence of power, the use of power in a helpful way. Often in those settings, what you find is a helpless, learned, what they call learned helplessness, or the victim posture where, you know, my capacity to do something, my capacity to take initiative, my capacity to have agency is somehow thwarted or diminished because I'm the victim of somebody else's use of power. And this power within leads us to seek power with or power to.
Yeah, if you'll just stop for a minute and think about when you have felt really frustrated, when you felt stuck, when you felt, you know, resigned and cynical, probably you were low on that power within. You know, you felt kind of helpless, maybe limp, you know, as if there's nothing you can do and you're just a victim of circumstances. But when we can tap into that power within, that's maybe the most powerful form of power that there is. It comes from within, and it allows us to run our own lives and to think about what we can do rather than getting stuck in what we can't do.
I'm coaching someone right now where the organization is going through a lot of change, and there's a lot of complaining and a lot of victim kind of helplessness that's going on. And there's this one person in the middle of the organization, not the boss, you know, not the top of the hierarchy, not, you know, kind of in the middle of the organization, who, you know, in our coaching calls, he talks about the challenges that he faces, but almost always he says, I get to choose. I get to choose who I'm going to be today. I get to choose how I'm going to respond today. I get to choose what I'm going to do with these challenges. And not only do I watch that with him, I watch it empower him. It inspires me. When I get around it, it makes me want to do more of that, exercising my own agency, of exercising the power within.
I think one place we can go to understand this is to our first formation, you know, to the families we grew up in. Our birth order may have something to do with it. And whether we just grew up with a sense that, you know, our efforts mattered and that we can make a difference and that, you know, we could contribute something versus if we didn't do that. And so I think that often we have kind of a default to helplessness that we learned before we ever got into a workplace, before we ever came to Aspen. that we may have to unlearn and relearn something else, to be able to relearn that when things are hard, I can tap into a power within to, like you said a minute ago, to choose how I'm going to show up.
Yeah, it might be helpful, Aspen, as you're listening to this podcast, to just turn the podcast off for a minute and think about that. Think about your family of origin, your first formation, when you tried to exercise agency, when you tried to set goals or express yourself and do, you know, kind of live out of your own identity. What happened and what did you learn about that? Just do some reflection on that before you before we proceed with the podcast, because I think that's really important. And if you grew up in a family where your exercising of that kind of power within was discouraged or punished or not validated, there may be some work to do there. You may want to talk with your coach about how that impacts how you show up in the workplace. It could be really important.
Yeah, because it's really miserable to show up at work and feel like you have no power, isn't it?
It really is.
I mean, that does feel miserable. I want us to shift now to just some basic concepts about power, and we're going to go through these pretty quickly. And I will put these in a document so that you'll have them where you can look at them. But just a few things to consider when we think about power. And the first one is that we're all in situations where we have more power or less power. There's no such thing as one person having all the power. There's no such thing as one person having no power. You know, I'm thinking about Viktor Frankl, who wrote mm-hmm. from a concentration camp in the 40s, who talked about, you know, at the end of the day, we all at least have the power to choose how we face the firing squad. You know, I remember my father talking to me about that when I was in high school, and that has stayed with me forever. But just the idea that we all have some kind of power in every situation, and nobody has all the power. But in general, we typically have more power in our culture if we're white, if we're attractive, I don't know by whose standards, but anyway, if we're attractive, we just get
English
more
speaking,
power.
Uh-huh. If we're English speaking, if we're male, if we're citizens of the U.S., if we have access to transportation, all of those things impact the kind of power you have.
Yeah. And so we're conditioned, you know, to when we look at where our level of power is, we're conditioned to compare up, to mm-hmm. compare ourselves to people who have more power than we do. And so we always end up feeling diminished. You know, it highlights our own sense of powerlessness when we're always comparing up. And yet, when we don't do that, when we actually compare down, we grow in empathy for other people, and our emotional well-being is higher. And I just think that, you know, that's something that I have some control over, who I'm comparing myself to.
Yeah, so the second thing we want to say about that is that the more power we have, the less likely we are to notice power dynamics and to blame those who do point out inequities. So I spent the first almost 20 years of my adult life not in a senior leadership position. So always looking to bosses and people above me and experiencing their exercise of power and making some pretty deep commitments that if I ever got to be, you know, at the head of an organization, I was going to be really attuned to the power dynamics and I was not going to do the things that those men and women did along the way. And I can actually look back when I first went to UBA to be the executive director there of a really large nonprofit organization. In the early days, I was very attuned to that. And I only saw it in the rearview mirror. But when I kind of look back after several years of working there, I can look back and see how the longer I was in the senior leadership role, the more challenging it became for me to pay attention to that. Unless I was very intentional, unless I had some things that were helping to remind me of that. The more power we have, the more we fear losing power, someone taking it away from us, or if they get more than we get less. But one of the things that I love about this conversation is that research shows that power isn't a finite resource. It's not a pie where, like, if you get a piece, then I'm going to get one piece less. That there's something about the dynamic that as it's shared, as we do the we, and more people get power, then it seems to multiply itself. And the person, the group, the organization has more power available to it than it does when we don't function in that kind of we way.
Yeah. So if that's what's true of people who have more power, you know, that they're less likely, or when we have more power, we're less likely to notice what's going on with power. And we're more likely to blame people who tell us things we don't want to hear about that. What we know about people who have less power, or for ourselves, when we're in that down position, we're more likely to feel threatened. We're more likely to fear punishment, more likely to feel as if we can't change our situation. Whether that's actually true or not, we're more likely to feel that way. When we're in the down position of a power dynamic, we experience more negative emotions. We pay more attention to feeling a sense of threat. We're more physiologically stirred up. You know, our heart rate is a little higher. We may have a little adrenaline flowing. And we tend to get really tuned in to what the authority figures want. Even if we're not planning to go along with what they want, right, we're very tuned in to knowing what they want. And it's important to know that if I'm in the down position, all those things are likely to be true of me. But it's also important to know if I'm in the up position, that all those things are likely to be true of the other person, even if we have a great relationship, even if we love and respect each other, all those things are still likely to be true.
Yeah, so comparing and contrasting, then people in the up position see the world more positively and less threateningly. They feel more positive emotion. They focus more on rewards and punishment. People in the up position often misread the relationship of power and shame. I wonder if you'd say, Tricia, a little more about that, about what the relationship between power and shame is.
Yeah, I think especially in a business setting, we're not worried that someone is going to misuse their power and hurt us, you know, harm us. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to hit us in the face. Nobody's, you know, likely to harm us physically. So once that kind of power is off the table, we sometimes think, well, then what's the threat? But the threat is often that I'm going to look bad, or mm-hmm. that I'm going to feel humiliated, or that I'm mm-hmm. not going to know what I'm supposed to know, or that I'm not going to be able to please an authority figure, and somehow that's going to come back on me. And that's the kind of threat we're talking about.
Yeah, and that can show up in just the most innocuous ways. I can be in a meeting with somebody who is above me in the hierarchy, and they say something that I don't understand, and I won't ask a question. I won't ask for clarification because I'm afraid if I do, the people above me will think that I'm not a good employee, or that I'm not smart, or that I'm not, you know, contributing in a way that I ought to be. It can happen in really innocuous ways like that, and it can happen in big and significant ways as well. But so often, why this is an important conversation is that kind of stuff is going on, the kind of stuff we're describing,
yeah,
and it's happening like an invisible enemy. It's very real, but I don't see it. And a part of what we're trying to do here, and even just using that example, what we're trying to do here is to help you grow your capacity to see the power dynamics as they are at work, so you can use them to the advantage of the mission of the company and the mission that you have for your life.
Yeah. I just think what you just said, maybe rewind and listen to that again, because that's really important. This is a little controversial, but there's also...
I love it when you do controversy.
There's also the idea that there is power in the victim position. So here's what I mean by that. If somebody misuses their power in my life, obviously that has a very negative impact on me, and I have less power, and I'm going to experience that very negatively. At the same time, I do also have some power. I can go gossip about that person mm-hmm. and kind of change the viewpoint of other people. I can sabotage them in ways that are passive aggressive where they least expect it. You know, I can just refuse to cooperate in ways that make it so that they can't succeed without my cooperation. I mean, there are just lots and lots of different ways that honestly, when I see them show up in my own life, are kind of a little devious, but are ways that when we don't feel we have power, we still have power in kind of a sneaky way. There's also power in the victim position, though, in another very completely different way, that we often have the power of the high ground. You know, we often have the power of knowing that we are right when somebody has mistreated us, has used their power to mistreat us. And, you know, in this case, we think about the power of, for example, a nonviolent protest, the power of a group of people, for example, coming together and confronting someone who's misusing power and, you know, being able to prevail in that situation.
Yep. Yep. All of that doesn't seem that controversial to me.
Well, sometimes seems what to make happens, sense. Though, is that people will say, you know, that we need to focus on how the person who is misusing power has power, and that it's somehow diminishing of the impact of that misuse of power to say that the victim also has power.
That's clarifying. Yep. Mm. Yeah, and so as we just continue to, you know, talk about the various ways that power shows up, people with power are much more likely to invoke rules or norms when you find yourself in a complex or emotionally charged situation. And they do that in part because they participated in making the rules or norms, and because typically the rules and norms are in their best interest.
And so one last concept about power to just consider is that one way to assess how power is operating in a system is to watch the flow of negative feedback. Mm-hmm. You know, there we will see power over, for example, if negative feedback only flows down. If negative feedback can flow up, so if you're getting negative feedback from subordinates, or if you're in a subordinate position and you're able to give negative feedback up, that may mean that there's much more of a power with dynamic, for example. And so in the next podcast, we're going to talk about feedback and how that works, mm-hmm. but it's just interesting to think about that as a function of the power in the system. All of that is really conceptual, right?
And we're going to put it in writing for you.
Gives you a chance to think about, okay, wherever you are in the system, there are people who have different kinds of power than you do, and there are people who can exert power on you, and there are ways that you can demonstrate power, and just thinking through that is all that we're asking you to do. But one of the things to name that happens in every organization is the tendency toward burnout. And it's really interesting because one of the things we know about burnout is that we don't get burned out by working hard. Working hard is not how burnout happens. Burnout happens in a variety of ways, but one really important way to look at it is that when we have responsibility for something, but we don't have the power for that thing, we are much, much, much more likely to burn out. You know, when we're in a job where we're being held responsible and accountable for something, but we don't actually have the power to produce that thing, we're much more vulnerable to burnout. And that's just something I think to keep in mind.
Before we go, Tricia, you've done so much work with this. Do you want to talk about learned helplessness?
Yeah.
And if that's something that resonates with people listening, how to unlearn helplessness?
Yeah, it's really interesting because, you know, we can produce learned helplessness in other creatures pretty easily. You know, you can produce learned helplessness in dogs, for example, by shocking them for no reason. And after a while, when they figure out nothing I do changes anything, they will slip into a really visible form of helplessness. They'll just, you know, if they're in a cage, they'll just lay in the cage and they won't interact and they'll stop doing things that dogs do, right? And what's really interesting is that even if you open the cage at that point, the dog won't leave because they have just internalized the idea that nothing I do makes a difference. And if that can happen with animals, that can certainly happen with people. And we get into that where maybe we've had experiences that have said to us that we're helpless. Maybe we have bought into a story or a way of thinking, a meaning that we're making that says nothing I do will make a difference. And if we're going to have anything approaching a healthy life in our relationships and our work, we have to be able to unlearn helplessness. And, you know, sometimes people will say, well, you know, what do I do to stop being helpless? And the answer is, well, just do something. And, you know, people will say, well, what do I do? And the answer is anything that isn't nothing. And that phrase I got from the Nagasaki sisters who write about burnout. Right. But the idea is maybe all you can do is move your body. Maybe all you could do is go for a walk. Maybe all you could do is talk to a friend and see, is there some way I can see this differently? Is there something that I can do? Do I have a blind spot here that I'm not seeing? I mean, basically anything that reminds us that we do have that power within, you know, that at the very least, we have the ability to choose what we can choose. So that's what I would say about helplessness.
Yeah, yeah, that's really helpful. And you know, so that's one piece of this larger conversation where really what we're working on, like at a really high level, is to increase the self-awareness of the people in the Aspen system. And so you go to work every day, and these power dynamics are all around you. You don't get to choose whether they're going to be there or not. You don't get to choose whether, you know, where you're going to be in the organizational hierarchy on any given day. You don't get to choose the first formation that your you or your colleagues had and how that first formation shows up when relationships get anxious or the work gets challenging or there's a breakdown that wasn't being planned for. But what we know to be true is that the more you can see these dynamics and the more you can be aware of when the dynamics get triggered, what do you do and what do you not do? What do you say and what do you not say? When you can begin to see that, then that gives you access to showing up differently. And so the skill set here starts with just learning to see the power dynamics in your particular context. In Aspen overall, in the team that you're on or the studio that you're in, there are power dynamics that are aware that are at work there. And just growing your capacity to name that without judging anybody or shaming anybody or, you know, conveying bad intent of anybody, but just saying, oh, these dynamics are at work, and beginning to see how them being at work, how that impacts you. When you can see that, then you get access in a new way or a different way to determining how you want to be. I know that's not good English, but we use that language all the time. How do you want to show up, given that this is what's so, given that these are the realities, then how do you want to be in that team, in that studio, in that group of people? And then the third piece, if the first piece is just seeing the power dynamics and the second piece is determining how you want to be in that, then the third piece is over time, maybe with the help of a coach, certainly with the help of ongoing conversations among other colleagues who are working on these same things, you work to grow your capacity to live into your guiding principles in light of the power dynamics. And that's a lifelong journey. But the more you can name the dynamics that we've been talking about, the more you can grow your attunement to when those dynamics are at work, the more you can see how they influence you, and the more you have choice and agency about how you're going to be in light of that. So go to work today and pay attention to the power dynamics.